In the 242-year history of the United States, our nation has had some terribly dark days that both scarred and defined our nation for decades to come. For example, one thinks of April 12, 1861. You may not know the date, but you know what happened then, when the rebel forces fired the first shots of the Civil War at Fort Sumter. Or December 7th, 1941, when the Japanese Imperial Forces launched a surprise attack on Pearl Harbor. Or, of course, September 11, 2001, when Al-Qaeda attacked the Pentagon and the Twin Towers. Tomorrow, we remember another of the dark days. In fact, I think the darkest day in American history. January 22, 1973, the day the Supreme Court, in the decision called Roe v. Wade, ruled that women have the right to kill their unborn babies. That day seemed only to immediately affect the life of one baby, the so-called Roe baby. But like Fort Sumter, Pearl Harbor, and 9/11, it would have far-reaching deadly effects in America and the whole world as the harbinger of the death of millions of other unborn babies. It was the beginning of what the popes have called a culture of death in the Western world. Since 1973, there have been over 6 million abortions committed in America, almost 60 times more than all the Americans killed in wars in our entire history. At least in war, Americans have usually been able to fight back, to defend themselves. And they were usually fighting for a just cause, or at least a cause they believed was just. But where is the just cause that demands the death of completely defenseless and totally innocent human beings? Tiny little babies that we should not be attacking, but protecting. How can a culture atone for this kind of barbarism? And how can a culture not be corrupted by such depraved indifference to human life? In fact, it has been corrupted. And we could see it in all sorts of ways throughout our society, but think tonight of four different ways, four important institutions that are essential for the well-being of society that have been corrupted by Roe versus Wade. First, it corrupted the legal system and the person of judges and lawyers, whose primary purpose should be to protect and defend the innocent and assure justice for all, for both the powerful and the weak. Instead, judges and lawyers have become the guarantors and apologists for the slaughter of the weakest and the most innocent in our society. And it affected the medical system, as doctors and nurses, whose primary purpose should be to foster and care for human life and health, to first do no harm to human life, they've corrupted this by making doctors and nurses the executioners of the most vulnerable life and assailants of their own patients in both abortion and euthanasia. But most of all, abortion has corrupted motherhood, that most wonderful of all gifts to the human family, the heart of the family, the school of love for children, and thus for all human beings everywhere. Roe versus Wade corrupted motherhood by trying and too often succeeding to transform it from being the epitome of selfless, loving sacrifice to being the co-conspirator in death. In the end, these poor women, so often coerced or panicked into their abortions, their lives have been destroyed by abortion and the lies that support it. And these second victims of abortion then are ignored and ridiculed when they express their pain and feelings of guilt. And even as abortion became acceptable, it lowered the bar and further corrupted motherhood, seeming to confirm the lie of radical feminists that motherhood was something that should be avoided, and thereby making contraception the responsible norm rather than the shameful aberration it had always been. And motherhood became a disease, and contraception was the antidote that kept you from catching that disease. And abortion was the cure for that disease. And stay-at-home moms, motherhood, mothers trying to take responsibility as best they can, stay-at-home moms and moms spending time at work and at home were wasting their lives, and large families, even families with only 3 or 4 kids, suddenly became a drain on society rather than the hope for the future. And the corruption continues to spread, corrupting even science. For example, science continues to develop new procedures that at first glance seem that they might be pro-life, but really are the exact opposite. For example, the amazing developments called in vitro fertilization. Unfortunately, this is also steeped in the culture of death. First, it transforms the divine gift of procreation from the flower, the fruit, if you will, of the divine gift of the acts of love of two parents, and changes it into the result of the mechanical skills of scientists and lab technicians. Babies are not conceived. Babies are manufactured. And beyond that, we also know that in all forms of in vitro fertilization, it requires the making of multiple embryos. After one of these embryos, tiny little baby, is implanted in her mother's womb, the other embryos, other tiny little babies from that same mother, are usually destroyed or killed, although sometimes they're frozen for later use, as if they were a package of lunch meat or something. And most of the time, they don't just implant one embryo, they implant 2 or 3 to sit and make sure that they become viable. And if they all become viable, two or three, well, we don't want twins or triplets, and so one survives and 2 are aborted. Another example of the deadly effects of rogue waiting science is embryonic stem cell research. It sounds like something that would be helpful, but doctors now take the techniques that they invented in vitro fertilization and throw aside the false facade of trying to help families have babies, and now brag about manufacturing babies just so that they can kill them and use their body parts for experimentation and research. The Nazi monster, Dr. Joseph Mengele, would be very proud of their ingenuity. And finally, we see the issue of cloning coming forward. Talk about the inhumanity of manufacturing people, scientists seeking to produce children without even the remotest involvement of any parents at all. We can go on and on. All of it just shows how that day, 45 years ago, this Monday, tomorrow, changed America and really the world, and made both a more deadly place to live in. It changed our whole way of looking at human life, and not for the better. But we are not without great signs of hope. For example, while our country has had to fight bloody, violent wars to end slavery and to stop imperialist hegemony and to defeat terrorism, the battle against Roe versus Wade is being waged and can be won without any violence at all. We can elect presidents and congressmen and senators and governors to change laws and approve sensible pro-life judges. In fact, this past year has seen several events that prove this, in particular with the election of our current president. Whether you love him or hate him, we have a new strongly pro-life justice on the Supreme Court, and so far 12 new pro-life circuit court judges. And whatever your politics or personal feelings are about the president, these judges were appointed by a man who has become the most outspoken pro-life president this country has really ever had. A president freely elected, without violence, without a coup. And of course, there's always the great sign of hope that we saw this last Friday. As for the 44th year in a row, hundreds of thousands of people marched on the Mall in peaceful protest in the March for Life, calling for an end to the culture of death once and for all. Now, some say that we're fighting a losing battle, that in the end, all these signs of hope are really just shadows and passing fancies, so to speak. But the thing is, they said the same thing 42 years ago about Martin Luther King Jr. And yet this last Monday, most of you had the day off in his honor. And today, a black man sits in the Supreme Court. And just a year and one day ago, there was a black man in the White House and been there for 8 years. If racial equality can triumph, why can't the even more basic cause of life also triumph? Not by violence and not by anger, but through the blessings of living in this great free republic, informed by the truth of Jesus Christ. Despite what people say, this nation was founded on Christian principles. And although some would say that America is now in a post-Christian era, that does not mean that the truth of Jesus Christ cannot be rediscovered. In today's first reading, we read how even the depraved ancient pagan city of Nineveh repented and reformed when confronted by the prophet Jonah. And as Jesus says elsewhere, you have one greater than Jonah here. We do have one greater than Jonah. We have Jesus himself. And by the grace of Jesus Christ, our country can change. And like Peter, Andrew, James, and John, Jesus calls us out today to help him to bring about that change. He says, come after me, and I will make you fishers of men. He calls us to join him as he casts his net to draw all hearts and minds from the dark confusion of the sea of death into the light of his gospel of life. This week, then, let us remember that darkest day, exactly 45 years ago, tomorrow, when the Supreme Court embraced a lie to open a door to the culture of death that surrounds us today, with its cold fingers strangling the institutions of law, medicine, science, and even motherhood itself. Let us also remember, by the grace of Jesus Christ, we live in a nation where oppression and lies can be overcome by truth and faith, and that every day God gives us great signs that he has not abandoned us. Let us accept and spread the grace and truth of Jesus Christ. Let us defend the dignity of every innocent human life from conception until natural death. Praise be Jesus Christ. Amen.